Good afternoon and welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Mary Catherine Carmichael. I'm usually the co-host of this show, but today Bob Salzberg is out, so I'll be holding down the host position on my own and look forward to welcoming Bob back next week. This is our autumn gardening show, so I'm very pleased to welcome today Helen May, retired, and I always wink a little bit when I say that, from May's Greenhouse. Most of you are probably familiar with that on the far south side of Bloomington. And today we're also joined by Seth Inman from Bloomington Valley Nursery. And Seth, this is your first time on the show, so welcome to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Helen, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
As our regular listeners know, this is a busy show typically for us. We get lots and lots of callers, so I'm going to start out with the phone numbers and our email address. And I'm going to urge you not to wait to call in because sometimes we get a little backed up and we don't always get all of our calls and emails answered. So he who hesitates is lost. Phone early, phone often. And the number is 855-0811. Or our toll-free number is 877-285-9348. And as always, our email address is noon@indiana.edu. Well, Seth, let's start out. I want to learn a little bit more about Bloomington Valley Nursery and what kind of things you specialize in there.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a new owner. We've had the business since February of last year. We specialize in softscape with a little bit of hardscape.
You want to define those for us?
Sure. Softscape is usually a tree and shrub installation.
Okay.
Hardscape would be walls, patios, water gardens, things of that sort.
Okay. And are you from Bloomington, this area?
I am born and raised.
All right. So, and you too?
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, homegrown, we might say. Oh, killing me. Okay. Seth, do you the trees, the larger trees, trimming, that kind of thing?
Yes, maintenance, pruning, mulching, installation.
Okay. Is this a good time of year to trim your trees?
It's a good year to trim some things, yes.
Yeah, what would you recommend we trim at this time of year?
Anything that's done flowering can usually be pruned right now.
Okay. Helen, you want to add anything to that?
Well, my expertise is not trees, though I know a bit about them. But any time that you have a diseased limb or a dead or broken branch or something, it should come out regardless of the time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have some ewes I haven't pruned this summer, so I'm going to have to do that.
So dead or diseased and anything that's already bloomed is
correct.
Okay to trim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got our first caller. Let's go ahead. Fred, go right ahead.
So I'd like to find out about achimonies. I got some bulbs, and, I don't know if I think I might have overwatered there at first, because I know they said keep them damp. And then after I realized what I was doing, I cut back on it. But you got any good tips on achimonies, and where's the best place to send and get those at?
Well, I don't know who to tell you to send to, but when you first get them, their culture needs to be somewhat similar to African violets as far as temperature and amount of water and so forth is concerned. They normally come as a little scaly-looking growth, an inch or two or three long, and you lay those down sideways and cover them lightly, a half inch or so. And you want to keep them a little bit moist but not soggy, and they should be around, this time of year, 65, 75 house temperature would be fine to start them. When they begin to grow, you can step up the watering a little, but it's easy to overwater until they become a fairly robust plant.
Do they have them out at May's?
They don't normally carry those. However, they might be able to recommend a place to get them.
Okay.
I would hesitate to give you the name of any particular company because...
That's all right.
I'm just not sure, but probably mail order would be your best bet, though sometimes you do find them in the bulb sections of, greenhouses or places like Lowe's or somewhere, though I'd be more apt to find those in the spring probably.
Okay. Okay,
in the fall.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Fred. Thanks for your call. We have a couple more callers backed up. I'll go ahead and give the numbers again in case you want to join in. Our numbers here are 855-0811. Our toll-free number is 877-285-9348. And our email address is noon@indiana.edu. And let's hear the question from Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a planting area in the front of my house, and the soil is pretty loosely packed clay-dominant soil. The problem I've been having is that I had three bushes there. Each of them developed these. They almost look like cancerous growths on them, and a neighbor who knows much more about gardening than I do thought that it might be some kind of fungus. I want to clear the bushes out, and I'd like to have a fall garden, but I'm concerned about the soil. Is that something I should be worried about, or can I go ahead and just assume that the plants themselves were diseased and that the soil is fine?
The plants probably have what's called a gall, and that can be pruned out. But if you were going to remove the shrubs and you wanted to put in new plants, I would say it would be a good idea always to amend your soil with some bags of compost and peat moss.
Okay.
Yes, if the soil is tends to run dry very quickly.
Yeah.
And the structure is clay, you do better to get a lot of organic material worked in. And certainly you have time yet to plant perennials or even vegetable plants. Some people put in a fall garden about this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
Do you have sun there, Joan?
I'm sorry?
Do you have sunshine there?
Yeah, I do.
Great. Okay, so what are you going to do for the fall garden? You're going to put some mums in, or
well,
what are you going
to? I had wanted to put in some mums, and I had also seen a few years ago. I saw this very pretty flower that was called, I think it was called Lysianthus, that was supposed mm-hmm. to bloom through the fall, and I was thinking about some of those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some foundation plantings with perennials in front would look really nice.
Okay.
All right. Well, great questions. We appreciate your calling in, Joan.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye bye. All right, and we've got another caller. Let's go to Della. Hi, Della.
Well,
go right ahead.
I'd like some advice about pruning wisteria.
Hmm.
How much and where and how do you get them to bloom?
Well, I can help you with the pruning. Almost as much as you want to prune them, really. Those things really grow about 10 feet a year. Is it getting out of control?
Della, is your wisteria getting out of control?
Yes, it's quite large.
Okay. Yeah, I would prune back what you need to, anything that may be hurting any structures or getting into other plants. And as far as fertilizing to get it to bloom, I would use something with a superphosphate.
Helen, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, you don't want to encourage it with nitrogen, but something high in a phosphate would help with the blooming. And if it's a big thing that's gotten totally out of control, you may want to cut it back just to a framework that is growing where and as you want it, and it will sprout again almost immediately. You can get a leaflet on pruning wisterias down at May's Greenhouse, but basically what you want to do is in the summer you kind of shorten everything up mm-hmm. because they can make great long runners 15, 20 feet long. And then late in the year or even in the winter, you will want to do a little additional pruning, but you should have a diagram or something to show you what. So you could get that down at the greenhouse.
Thank you.
So now is the nitrogen, that will increase blooms as opposed to just – or I mean, sorry, the nitrogen will increase – I said it exactly backwards.
Mm-hmm.
The nitrogen increases just basic growth. And
yes.
But the
correct.
Phosphate, that increases blooms.
Correct.
Yes, that's often what we recommend, say, for lilacs that are shy of blooming.
Hydrangeas as well.
I was just gonna say,
hydrangeas,
how about hydrangeas
also.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. That's very good information. Thank you very much. Thanks for your call, Della. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Sure. And here's an email that has come in. It says, I have wild violets taking over the yard. What would work on them and not kill the grass?
Hmm. Go ahead, Helen.
Yeah. You might know more about it than me.
I found a lot of times it's best just to pull those out by hand, mm-hmm. but they can be pretty
If it's a real problem that, you know, you got a lot of them that you think you need to use a chemical. I don't know exactly what it's called. It has ester in its name, E-S-T-E-R, and they carry it at the greenhouse. It's the only thing I've ever found that will really take them out. even Roundup is not too good. And, of course, it would kill your grass.
Right.
I don't believe the ester will harm your grass. The thing with violets is that they make seed all summer, not just when they're blooming, but they have a little make little seed pods down at their base where they're hidden. And so they just have seeds everywhere. And if you don't have too many, I would say dig them out and be sure you get the crown of the plant out as you go. If you just have tons, why, I would go with the herbicide.
Oh, my gosh. So that little bulb thing or, you know, kind of – yeah, I guess that's the best way to describe it. That's actually producing seeds?
Yeah. If you dig one of those up, you'll find little green pods there.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm going to have to look into this.
Okay.
I had no idea. Wow. I'm learning a lot today. All right. Well, thanks for the email, and good luck with that. I'll give our phone numbers again, 855-0811, toll-free 877-285-9348, and our email is noon@indiana.edu, and this is our autumn gardening show, even though it's still technically summertime. We're starting to gear up for autumn. I've got a question. I'm fighting poison ivy still. I've done everything but, you know, napalm. And I'm considering that, actually. Do you have any suggestions for me?
A really strong herbicide, maybe even mixed with a heavier dilution. And if you can stand it, put on a good pair of gloves and long sleeves and pull as much as you
can. I've done that, actually, yeah. But so is there a specific brand name? I've done the Roundup, and it scoffs at Roundup.
Down at the garden center, you can get a brush and vine killer.
Brush and vine killer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
I've used stump killer on it sometimes, too. It's very persistent. It has an underground root system, if you have quite a lot of poison ivy, that it's all interconnected, a lot of it. So if you kill back one piece, there's a lot of energy there to push another top up, you know. So if you have a big patch, try to treat a big patch all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you can put that directly on the leaves so you don't have to kill the surrounding vegetation?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I use a tank sprayer and just squirt here and there where the poison ivy is. You get a little other stuff, but you get most of the ivy that way.
And I would say it is best to spray it. That way you kill as much underground as possible.
Okay. Well, I'm sure my neighbors will appreciate that as opposed to the napalm. Okay, let's see. We are getting into fall. What kinds of things should we be doing right now in our gardens, in our yards, just kind of late
summer? I'd be concentrating on weeding right now, you know, tidying up your pruning, maybe getting a little bit of debris out of your bed so it's easier to remove leaves in the fall.
If you're going to transplant any perennials, it should be done before the 1st of October in this climate. Irises really should have been done last month. So if they haven't been done and you need to, do it now.
Mm-hmm.
However, Siberian iris, you should wait until September to reset.
Okay. All right. We have a couple of callers. Let's go to Lorianne first. Hi, Lorianne.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I want to put in a fall garden. My spring garden was totally, the weather and the flooding took care of it. I've never done a fall garden before. I don't have too many microclimates, but I have a lot of shade.
Mm-hmm.
What can I put in that you think might do well this fall if the good Lord wills?
All right. Good question.
Shade plants, hostas, hecaras are nice, and they seem to kind of rebloom. There's certain varieties of hosta that'll bloom into the fall, hecaras as well. Brunaria is always nice.
What about ferns? Can she do any ferns?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's early enough that they would establish, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You are talking about flowers and not a vegetable garden, right?
Actually, no. I was asking about the vegetable garden, but I'll take the flower advice, too, because my yard itself is almost all shade, and I hate to get rid of my trees. So I have some sunny ground, but like I said, the weather this spring and with the flooding, my spring garden is kaput.
All right, if you want to put a fall garden in, right now you probably can find anything, plants for anything in the cabbage family. That is broccoli, cabbage, maybe cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. You may be able to find some onion sets and
chives maybe.
Yeah, chives. And those all require sun. It's too late for anything like tomatoes or corn or beans.
What about lettuces?
Lettuces, you could sow, or you could find possibly plants at a greenhouse.
Is there any chance in our area that you can get a good fall pea crop?
They probably should have been in the ground earlier than this.
Okay.
To give you time. It would do no harm to try. The seed's not that expensive. Soak the seed before you plant it overnight. That will help to get it up in a hurry. Choose a variety that has the shortest period to maturity possible.
Well, I had thought about calling one of the seed companies that caters to the upper northwest and has the really short growing season stuff, and I didn't know if our late summer would be too hot for those kind of seedlings or not.
Yeah, well, one of the problems with a late summer garden here, anything you put in it, is there's a heavy insect population now, and the days are pretty hot. However, you've probably noticed the nights are beginning to cool quite a lot, and that is good for a lot of these crops. A lot of these fall crops will stand a light frost without being damaged. So the cooler it gets in the fall, the better they're going to do for a while.
All right.
If insects become too big a problem, you can cover with something like floating row cover, or you can, of course, spray with whatever you prefer to use on vegetables. We usually use some soap or maybe some Rotenone occasionally at home. As for the short season crops that they would grow in the Northwest, I don't know. But certainly you could check with, I know our greenhouse carries fall seed for vegetables. Turnips, beets, you might still have time for.
Okay.
And greens, and it's a good time to plant some spinach. In fact, we generally winter spinach over with a mulch and have it again in the spring from a fall planting.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much.
It sounds like you're going to be busy.
I'd better be. I need something out of that garden this year.
Well, good
thank
luck,
you all
Gloria.
Very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, we have another caller who's been holding patiently. Alan. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Two questions, please. Number one, what can I do for a golden delicious apple tree which consistently picks up cedar rust? Mm-hmm. And please don't say get rid of the cedar trees, because there are hundreds of them around in eastern Greene County, and I cannot eliminate the cedar trees. And secondly, comment, please, about a rose bush, one out of six, located in the same vicinity and receiving essentially the same treatment. But for 2 years in a row now, it has gone into summer. All of the leaves have turned yellow after a fairly spectacular first bloom, and then they drop off. I pruned the bush back, and now it has come out again, and the foliage is growing quite vigorously, and I have every reason to believe it's going to bloom again, quite nicely, in another probably 3 weeks.
All right, you've got our guests' heads nodding, so I think they know what your problem is.
I think Seth needs to talk to you about the tree.
Oh, thank you, Helen. on the apple tree, I'm not as familiar with fruit trees as I'd like to be. I know what I do with the rust at my house on my trees is I prune it out. There's probably some kind of spray that you could put on there. Unfortunately, I don't know what. But I would suggest pruning it out if it's not just overriding the tree completely. And it sounds like you're doing the right thing with the rose.
The tree is entirely covered with cedar rust. So
well,
if I pruned it out, that would mean I cut it down.
He probably was talking about pruning the galls out of the local junipers. But if you've got hundreds of them, that may be a problem too. They show up in the junipers as
is it a gall?
Yeah, and it turns orange and squishy in wet weather and makes spores.
Mm-hmm.
But the tree, you can start a spray schedule early in the spring if you want to spray.
With what?
Well, now there I'm not real up to date on fruit trees. You'll need a good fungicide. I would recommend that you check with either a greenhouse or a nursery that sells fruit trees. I would hesitate. We used to use some things that aren't usable anymore. The county agent's office, mm-hmm. that's the Monroe County Area Extension Agent, can give you a program for spraying for this disease. Just call them up and tell them what your problem is, and they can tell you what to use and when to apply it. And as for the rose, it sounds like it just succumbs to black spot every summer when the weather gets hot and nasty. It may be a variety you'll want to – are they all the same variety and just the one does this? Or
There are six different varieties, but right. I don't believe it is black spot because, first of all, I do spray for fungicide mm-hmm. as well as insecticide. And I'm familiar with black spot because I've had the problem in the past. Mm-hmm. But on this, the leaves just turn yellow, almost mm-hmm. as if it is being drowned in water and overwatered, but it's not.
Well, I don't know what might be causing that situation. However, if it's just the one and the others are doing well, I would say dig it out and get you another variety.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it may also – usually yellowing of leaves is chlorosis, and it may have a mineral deficiency due to a heavy bloom, especially if it turns yellow after it blooms.
No?
You don't think so?
It's possible. Certainly, when you plant a rose, you should try to improve the soil as much as possible at planting time. This one, you might dig down and discover that there's something different about the soil there. There may be a layer of clay you're not aware of, or a bunch of limestone gravel or something that's causing it to not pick up the nutrients it needs correctly.
Yeah, either way, I would agree with Heather. Helen, take it out and maybe put it somewhere else, and it might like it in a different spot in the yard.
All right.
But the problem is, yeah, I was considering taking it out. But none of you folks have another one similar to it that I can replace it with any longer. So I haven't been able, and I do like it. It's a candy-striped rose, Floribunda.
Well, normally you get those only in the spring.
Right.
And if you want to move this one this fall so you'll have a spot open in the spring, wait until about, almost November to move it. Mound it up with soil like you – or whatever you normally mound your roses with in the fall. Just prepare a spot for next spring for our new rose.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call, Alan. We appreciate it. All right. And somebody around here has sent us some information about the ester. It's called Turflon ester, specialty herbicide. And it says it's developed to stop the most stubborn weeds, including wild violet, ground ivy, and many others. So I think that might have been what you were referring to.
Yes. Yes, it was. Okay. You know, I've been retired a few years, and these names slip away.
Well, that's great. Thank you for whoever sent us that information. We appreciate it. All right. Ray has been holding patiently, so let's get right to Ray. Go ahead, Ray. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Yes, I have a question on clematis. I thought it was usually pretty hardy and disease-free, but I have one. I've had it for quite a while, and it was just beautiful, and then it died back, and now it blooms some this spring, but it has died back even more. And I wondered why. I thought it seems like somewhere I read that you shouldn't fertilize them. I'm not sure if that's right or not. But.
You shouldn't fertilize them with strong chemical fertilizers, and you shouldn't fertilize them with slow-release chemical fertilizers. You could use a liquid.
Right, that's what I use, like Miracle-Gro.
Yes,
right.
Or you could just top dress with some good compost every year.
Right.
Now, very often when a clematis dies back, if you will simply cut it off to the ground,
right,
it will come up again reasonably healthy.
Right.
If this has happened to you 2 years in a row, is it the same tissue that's died back, or is it another part of the vine that hadn't died before?
No, basically it was all over the trellis to begin with and was just beautiful, and then it died back and there was, oh, I would say not even a fourth of what it was before in size, the plant.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that they like to be cool and kind of moist and the roots shaded, I believe I've read.
Yes. Well, there are a couple of organisms that attack clematis especially. About all you can do is cut everything that's diseased off and get it away and burn it.
Right.
You might want to rake the mulch away and apply something like, is it Daconil? That's a good fungicide that you can mix up. Daconil, just to mix you up a watering can full and soak the root area with that.
Uh-huh.
And then put some fresh, clean mulch back.
Right.
And see if it recovers next year.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you have a cure for voles or moles?
There is no cure for moles.
Except cats. I always offer people, I'll loan you my cats if you need them, because they took care of them in my yard.
Ran a cat.
That's right. The shelter's got plenty, so go on out there, give a cat a home, and get rid of your voles all at one fell swoop.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your call. Well, we're just about at break time. I want to give the numbers one more time before we go to break so you can give us a call during the second half of the show. Our number here is 855-0811, 877-285-9348 if you're out of the immediate area. And our email address is noon@indiana.edu. You're listening to Noon Edition.
Listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. If you're a person on the go, you can take WFIU programs with you. We're podcasting. Podcasting is a convenient and easy way to download audio files directly to your computer. Listen anytime from your computer, iPod, or portable player. You can download podcasts of full-length programs like Noon Edition, Ask the Mayor, and Harmonia, or short features like Kinsey Confidential, the Ether Game musical mini quiz, and movie, play, and opera reviews. You can find out how with a visit to our website at wfiu.org.
And welcome back to Noon Edition. You're listening to our Autumn Gardening Show. We're joined this afternoon by Seth Inman from Bloomington Valley Nursery and Helen May from May's Greenhouse. And we're talking about all things green and growing, or at least hopefully green and growing if we play our cards right here. Our phone numbers are 855-0811 and noon@indiana.edu if you'd like to contact us. And we do have an email that came in during the first half of the show. It begins, I was told that coffee grounds added to the soil is helpful to certain plants. Is that true, and which ones can benefit?
Yeah. I don't know if I would put straight coffee grounds on, maybe lightly. It's highly acidic. It would be good for evergreens and hydrangeas if you wanted them to turn pink. But
yeah, things like azaleas and rhododendrons, mm-hmm. anything that requires acidic, blueberries. Anything mm-hmm. that requires an acidic soil. Our soil around here normally is, what, close to neutral?
Close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you have a plant that really requires acidic conditions, sure, you could but don't overdo it. I assume you're talking about a household coffee pot, so you're probably fine there.
Mm-hmm. Do you just sprinkle it on top of the soil around the plant?
Just sprinkle it on or work it into the mulch.
Work it in a little bit,
yeah. And it'd be all right to mix through your compost if there's not a great quantity of it.
Mm-hmm.
Eggshells are good in your compost, too. Let them dry first and kind of pound them up or kind of break them up with your hands.
And why are they good?
Well, lots of calcium.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very clever. You have all the tricks, don't you? All right. Well, let's go on. Let's talk a little bit. Since it's fall, a lot of people like to put in mums in the fall. But sometimes they think they're buying mums, but they're really buying asters. What's the difference between a mum and an aster, if any? And are there any different applications for mums versus asters?
You got anything to say, Seth, on that?
Well, they're really kind of similar, actually. I mean,
in shape, yeah. You get a ball-like mounded effect. The asters usually are open in the center and have very narrow colored ray petals.
Mm-hmm.
The mums can be either daisy-like or petaled completely over.
Mm-hmm.
The leaf difference is that the aster leaves tend to be a little narrow and elongate, while the mum leaves will be scalloped on the edges. Mm-hmm. The asters are more apt to live over. I have planted in the fall.
Yeah,
a
perennial.
They need good soil
and
a reasonable amount of moisture. Mums will tolerate a drier condition than asters. Asters probably should be divided every 2-3 years just to keep them good.
So it's worth giving it a shot, putting them, the ones that you buy, just at the grocery or you know, all the places they're available everywhere, it seems.
Certainly the asters, and sometimes you luck out with the mums, but
this is a question I've sometimes had. When we treat these as a perennial, do we keep those pinched back until it's time for them to bloom in the fall?
Well, yes, if you have asters or mums – You can pinch back early in the year to keep them shorter and make them denser, and also to delay the early straggly blooms so that they bloom more at the same time, make more of a display. I know mums you can cut back as late as the 4th of July.
That was my friend Karen's mom's rule.
Yes.
Keep them nipped back until the 4th of July.
Yes. And if you forget it and they're 2 feet tall, you can cut them back to a foot tall at the 4th of July and they'll still branch and bloom.
Wow.
But the asters, if you cut them back too severely and too late, you may get kind of straggly bloom. So early in the season, pinch them a bit to thicken them up, but don't carry it too late.
And I know when I buy mums, when I put them at my house, I like to get them when they're not quite open yet. That way you get the full enjoyment out of the blooms.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's always nice to buy almost any flower that you're buying that may not be long-term early in its growth so that you get as much out of it as possible. Mums require good drainage, lots of sun. They need to be mulched after it freezes. But our problem here is that sometimes it freezes and sometimes it thaws and sometimes it doesn't freeze at all.
Mm-hmm.
And very often they just don't come through the winter, that first season for you. If you get one established that's come through the winter for you, it generally will be fairly permanent in that place. However, you do need to dig it up and divide it every few years because they get too dense and they go downhill.
If you put them in a pot, can you bring them in and winter them over in the house?
You probably could use an unheated garage or maybe even a crawl space. You need to watch them along come spring because when they start to grow, you got to get them out to some light. But the main problem with mums is just in our climate, the alternating weather, freezing, thawing. If they settled in under a nice snow for the winter, they'd probably come through in great shape.
Okay.
But we just don't have that kind of climate.
Okay. Anything to add, Seth?
No, I would agree with that. I don't know about bringing a mum in about it as a houseplant, though.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think it would. It wouldn't do to bring it in as a houseplant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it needs a dormant period.
And I know a lot of people have success with that with geraniums, and so I thought perhaps mm-hmm. perhaps mums
well,
might be the
I,
same deal.
The few times I've tried watering them over in pots, I've just put them in my unheated garage. And usually they come through pretty well if I don't forget and let them go bone dry.
Yeah, there's that. You need a little note on the refrigerator, I think, maybe for something like that. Okay, well, we've had several emails that have come in. And if you just tuned in, this is our Autumn Gardening Show. We're joined by Seth Inman from Bloomington Valley Nursery and Helen May from May's Greenhouse. And let's go ahead. Here's one of the emails. Is it time to plant strawberries? And then a really bad pun. And speaking of asters, don't forget, there's got to be a morning aster. All right. That was painful, whoever sent that in. Time to plant strawberries? Yes? No?
Not really.
Okay. What would you recommend?
Early spring for strawberries.
Yes. Anytime second half of March on through April. Be good for strawberries. My sister grows strawberries, and sometimes she will, from her established plants, she will bury pots and you know, they make runners.
Right.
And she'll root little plants in those pots and leave them in the ground and mulch them over, and then the next spring cut them loose and plant them. I'm not saying this right. Root them in the pots, and then come autumn, she cuts them loose and plants them. And then all strawberries could use a little mulch through the winter. Yeah.
Okay. All right. This next one begins Ms. Wonderful, which I thought was directed toward me until I read further, and it's directed toward Helen, of course. What can I do to kill trumpet vine that keeps coming up where it's not wanted? Thank you, and I love traveling from Kokomo to visit your nursery.
Well, Seth can probably offer you as much advice as I can. Now, trumpet vine is one of those things that if you have a big one growing in your yard, it's going to pop up in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. And let's just for folks who aren't sure, that's the one with the kind of bright orange usually flower that's rather about 3 inches long, maybe four.
Right.
And
the humming, yeah. The hummingbirds really love them.
Okay.
Yeah, Helen's right. That stuff really can take over. A mature one with a 3 or 4 inch caliber trunk, you can have runs 30 feet away and know it.
Is that a native species or is that an invasive?
Yeah, I think it is a native. The best way to get rid of that is to cut it back nearly to the ground and drill a hole and put in some stump remover, which is usually a granular form.
But that involves killing the central plant. If you want to keep your central plant, the only thing you can do with the runners is cut them off and put a little weed killer on them. It won't kill the main plant, but it'll maybe keep that one sprout from coming up again.
Yep.
Another one that requires the heavy artillery, it sounds like. Okay, very good. Here's another email. Is there any recommended way to rid flower beds of weed grass? I pull it but never succeed in removing every root, and it grows back.
Roundup. I would say maybe some preen or some early spring pre-emergent.
What about a barrier? I wonder if this is maybe grass that's creeping in from her yard.
And if so, you know, a good edge or some landscape edging on the bed can help. And fabric is always a good idea if you're worried about pulling weeds.
Okay. Let's talk about edging a little bit. I remember, you know, traditionally there's the black plastic edging. Is that still considered, you know, the way to go, or are there other options in edging?
It's pretty common. If you're going to put in edging, it's a lot more easy to deal with than, say, like the metal edging. A lot of times what I do and what I think looks the best is spade edging the bed and removing that sod, because the beds are always changing and plants kind of outgrow the bed sometimes. And if you put in a permanent edging, it's hard to move that permanent edging if the shrub starts to take over into the lawn. It's easier to reshape the bed.
So that's just a matter of
you personal know, preference, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as the act of putting in the border itself, just taking a spade and making kind of a trench, is that what
Correct.
You're describing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that really does act as a barrier? Do you have to spray the trench, or what do
you do? It works pretty good if you can dig straight down with a spade, you know, into the edge, and then, you know, at an angle from the bedside toward your straight down cut on the lawn side, and leave some of that soil exposed. Mm-hmm. The grass will have a harder time getting into your bed if you have, like what you said, a trench.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I used to edge rose beds at the first nursery I worked at, and I didn't have to do it over 2-3 times a summer, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead. We've got another phone caller. Let's go to Nita. Hi, Nita.
2-3 times a summer, maybe.
Right. Nita, you want to turn down your radio?
Well, let's go ahead. We've got another phone caller. Let's go to Nita. Hi, Nita.
Nope, I guess we don't have Nita anymore. All right. Hopefully we have Jane. Jane, are you there?
Hi, you guys. This is Jane.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to add a little piece of my experience with chrysanthemums, and that is that often, since the fall chrysanthemums don't survive through the winter, I often buy small seedling plants of chrysanthemums in the spring when they're available in the nursery or from mail order catalogs and get them going in my garden. And by fall, they're great, huge, glorious plants. And they almost always make it through the following winter. So there's a kind of a two-pronged strategy for it. You can start with some plants this fall, and if they don't make it, it's not a huge loss because you can start in again next spring and have them for the following fall.
All right. Thanks, Jane. And for those of you who don't know who this is Jane Clay on the phone, and she's another gardening goddess, has one of the most beautiful yards I've ever seen. So whatever she says, do. She knows what she's talking about.
Thank you, Mary Catherine.
Thank you, Jane. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, here's another one. Let's see. I have a couple of hydrangeas that I've never seen bloom. I've been living in my house for almost 3 years and no blooms have formed. I believe they are a common hydrangea known as big leaf. Does she need the phosphate?
Well, that's always a good idea to encourage blooms. The big leaf varieties, they bloom on new wood. Isn't that correct?
I think so. There are so many hydrangeas, they're somewhat confusing. But some bloom on new wood, in which case you have no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And some bloom on old wood, in which case if you get any freeze back in the winter, then you get no blooms.
Mm-hmm. Hydrangeas is such a hot topic. Getting them to bloom, it seems like everybody has problems with that.
Me too.
Boy, my best suggestion would be to not put too much nitrogen on it and maybe a superphosphate. If it is a big leaf hydrangea, and I am correct about when to prune it, I would wait until you see growth in the spring and then prune back any of the dead canes.
Okay.
And hopefully it should bloom for you.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't bloom or prune anything until fairly late spring where I can see what's going to live and what isn't and take it from there. Not that I've had such great success, so don't listen to what I'm saying. Okay, well, good luck. I've got the same problem, so let me know if you get that figured out. I also have a climbing hydrangea that nothing. Great foliage, no blooms.
How old is it? Has it been there?
It's established. I planted it probably 6 years ago, maybe 7.
Well, give it some phosphate.
Phosphate for everyone. All right, that's what I'll do. I'll give that
a
shot.
And if you're fertilizing it with a lot of nitrogen, don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah. Well, you told me to be mean to it, so I've been doing that. Well, let's go to Nita. She's back on the phone. Hi, Nita.
Hi. Finally got in there.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Helen, we miss you terribly. So come back. Okay?
She's still here.
It's not the same thing without you.
Well, thank you for the compliment.
I went to a party about a week ago. I think there were 8 or 10 people there. They live all over Bloomington, and everybody was talking about one thing, deer.
Oh, yes.
And the damage that they're doing. You labor, you plant these gorgeous plants, and the next morning when you wake up, the deer have eaten them down to the ground.
There are a lot of different deer products that you can try, which I would suggest. There's Liquid Fence, Deer Vic, even some insecticide granules deer don't like. And there's even things so far as battery-operated shockers.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Battery operated shocker. Mm-hmm. How do you get close enough to shock them?
It's got a little scent in it, and the deer, you put it near a plant that the deer usually want to eat.
Ooh,
on.
Ooh, I love it.
And it's got a little scent in there, and they lick it, and it shocks them, and it is kind of funny.
Oh,
but it doesn't hurt the deer, though.
Ooh,
well, the deer might not agree.
Yeah, well, my whole block, all of us are just, you know, up in arms. We've got five deer living in our neighborhood in a vacant house.
Are you doing anything to control the deer right now? Any products that you're using or anything like that?
Deer Off.
Deer Off? How many years have you been using that same product?
Two.
I have found that sometimes the deer will get used to a product.
Exactly.
And it may be time for you to switch to a different product to get rid of the deer.
Yeah.
What about the soap trick? Have you tried the soap trick, Helen's soap trick? Well, soap, rather smelly soap, something with high perfume content.
Uh-huh.
You can buy bars and fasten them about deer nose height. In places not too conspicuous, but around the plants that you want to protect.
Mm-hmm.
It's the smell that keeps them away. My sister uses perfume. She goes to yard sales and buys cheap perfume and puts it on sponges and around.
That's great.
And one thing to remember when you're spraying is very often, if you just go around and spray the tips, you don't have to spray the whole plant very often. It's the soft, tender growing tips that they generally will go to, and the flower buds and that sort of thing.
Okay. I also want to ask you when you prune butterfly bush.
In the spring.
Okay.
I generally,
also with hydrangeas, same thing, huh?
Yeah, I generally prune my butterfly bushes in March or April as soon as I see some signs of new foliage and cut them back about 8 inches high, everything.
Okay, March and April. Okay, Helen, come back. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck with your deer, Nita.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we've got just a few more minutes left in the show. If you have a question or a comment, 855-0811 or noon@indiana.edu. Now, I've made an observation, and I want to see if you two have observed the same thing. I haven't seen as many Japanese beetles this year and last year as I had in previous years. Is this a trend? Is this anything that you all have noticed, or am I just getting lucky for some reason?
They don't seem to be as intense a huge numbers as they were originally. I suspect a couple things. Probably the extremely dry summer we had last year cut down on
the larvae.
The larvae. They emerge in the summer, and the ground was hard as rock. And if they didn't survive to emerge and lay eggs, and if they're eggs didn't get into the ground and start feeding, that would reduce the numbers.
What did their larvae look like?
They're little
white things?
White grubs.
Oh, yeah, check those
white
out.
Grubs.
Step on them.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
But also, I suspect there probably are some local predators that have developed a taste for them, though I don't see how they could. They stink. And that is probably causing them some problems.
And maybe all of these purple traps that everyone has seen may be helping a little bit as well.
Those purple traps are for
is that for the ash borer?
Green ash borers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, that'll be our next plague.
Yeah, next year. Mm-hmm.
Kill all the ash trees.
The ash borers, yeah. That's moving this way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame. All right, well, we have another couple callers. We'll try to get on the line before we run out of time today. Let's start out with Betty. Go ahead, Betty.
Hello. I wondered if you have any suggestions for Siberian irises that don't seem to bloom very well.
Hmm. They may need dividing if they've been in several years. September is the time to do it.
Okay.
It will take them a couple of years to really recover from being moved. But they can get so old. I've got several clumps this way, and it'd take a tractor and a backhoe, I think, to move them. I don't know. But they sometimes will develop an opening in the center of the plant when they begin to get old.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I think would keep them from blooming would be just way too much shade.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call, Betty. And now to Mary Beth. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi there.
Go ahead with your question.
I've got a question about a pond in my yard. I've got a pond and a waterfall that's the delight of my life. And I just was wondering, what is the function of algae in there? Because I keep fighting with the darn stuff, and I don't know what to do with it.
Well, it's a good question. A lot of people battle algae in their ponds. There's two different types of algae that usually you'll find. There's string algae, which usually attaches itself to rocks. And if you have a water garden, and the waterfalls is really where it's going to be a bad problem, because typically fish inside your pond will maintain the string algae for you for the most part. The other one, which is a little harder to battle, is the free-floating algae. That's where your water turns green. Completely, it doesn't attach itself. Just the water will be very dense green. There are products that you can use that are safe and some that are not safe. Some of those products are String Algae Buster, which you can get down at Bloomington Valley Nursery. And for the free-floating algae, there are a couple products, one called Algae Fix, which on the label I think it says it could be harmful to domestic animals and sometimes birds. So, you know, maybe not so much. But there is a new product that I've been using that is ecologically friendly called EcoFlock, and it replicates a natural process in nature called flocculation, and where it combines suspended particles in the water, such as dirt or free-floating algae, and it really seems to do a good job.
Ah, well, but I do remember somebody being told that a certain amount of algae is desirable in a pond.
That is correct.
And so how do you know whether you've got the kind, the desirable kind or the not desirable kind?
Well, typically free-floating algae is not desirable. String algae kind of is. If you have a pond, you really want an ecosystem, and algae is part of a natural ecosystem. Too much algae would be more than a quarter or a third of the pond covered with algae. It would be a good idea. Like if you could see three-quarters or two-thirds of the pond surface not covered by the string algae, it's a pretty healthy pond. But you're correct. Algae is part of part of the pond ecosystem, and you are going to have some algae.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, does your pond have a pump?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And now, do you have to be careful about any of these chemicals with the affecting the pump mechanism?
No, you shouldn't, no.
Okay.
And a lot of times these pumps come with filters that help take care of a lot of the debris that the algaecides break down.
Oh, okay.
Another reason people sometimes have algae is if they have overloaded the pond with nutrients. This could come from fish poo.
Correct.
If you've got too many fish in a pond for the size of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Or excess feeding, and the food rots in the pond, and so forth.
All right. I'm sorry, but we have to cut it off at that point. Thank you, Mary Beth, for your call. We've come to the end of our autumn gardening show. It always goes so fast. I want to thank both of our guests, Seth Inman from Bloomington Valley Nursery, Helen May from May's Greenhouse. I want to thank Colin Bishop, who produced for us today, and Mike Pashkash, who is our sound engineer. Join us next week when Bob Salzberg will be back. Until then, I'm Mary Catherine Carmichael. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.